Well, it's been a hell of a week, and between visiting fathers, dinners, and vomiting children to, I don't know, an extreme level in the nights leading up to having to record this podcast, Nathan and I were utterly unable to actually sit down and record it. So, as some of you have heard, we do have a backup episode that we knew we would eventually have to use for exactly this type of situation. Now, the interesting thing is that we recorded this backup episode after already recording a full episode of Jaded Gamercast, and we're already suitably liquored up. So when this episode started, it just kind of continues in such a way that by the end of the episode and weeks later, Nathan and I, neither of us, actually remember what we talked about in this episode. So know that we'll probably be listening this week as well, just to see what the heck was going through our heads at that time. So here it is, episode 43, The Backup. Welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, and of course my partner is Nathan! No, of course with me as always is Nathan. You're supposed to say something witty at that point, but...
We are well past the point of witty at this point.
Jaded Gamercast listeners, this is, as we like to say in the podcasting industry, is... I don't know shit about the podcasting industry, but this is this is our backup episode. We recorded this episode after already recording a full episode of Jaded Gamercast, which means that we have been drinking for a little bit more than 2 hours at this point, so we are very drunk. which I think works very well for within the realm of podcasting. I'm sure the Aussies would agree with us that being drunk is what makes Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000 very, very entertaining.
But I didn't think the Aussies could actually get drunk. I mean, when you put liquor on your cereal in the morning.
Yeah, but that goes along with not being able to count. Moving on. an island of criminals, you know. But anyways, no. Again, you are listening to Jaded Gamercast, and we do have a semblance of a format that goes along with this. My name is Lang. I am drinking scotch. Nathan is drinking port. And how far are you into that bottle of port right now, Nathan?
Well, I cracked the bottle open 2 hours ago, and I have one glass left, so I'm going to try to savor it.
See, I'm working on my fifth ounce of Old Pultini right now, 12-year-old Pultini, so...
Yeah, well, this glass is 750 milliliters, so I've, you know, like I said, I've almost polished that off in 2 hours. It will most certainly be done by the end of this episode.
That is impressive, my friend. Hopefully you've been enjoying the show. We don't know when we're going to be tossing this episode in, so please keep in mind that... we are not of sound mind and body.
Okay, now, to give you a little context, we did just record episode 6, so if you want to pause this to go re-listen to episode 6 to hear how drunk we are at the end, that will give you some context of how drunk we are at the start of this.
Nathan, that is a dedicated listener who will actually go back through and re-listen to episode 6, because we were relatively drunk by the end of that episode.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, hi, Mom. So, higher learning, Nathan. What are we talking about today?
Today we want to talk about Eldar because...
Elves?
You know, hey, look, if there's one thing I like about all the games is it's...
Future pointiers.
Word. So we're going to talk about Eldar. I think it is fairly topical because the Dark Eldar were a recent addition and kind of like the... Space Marine / Chaos Space Marine similarities. I think there is always going to be some relevant discussion about how the Eldar fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Dark Eldar have been re-released and are better in almost every way.
Yes. So I think the really funny thing about Eldar, and Kyle has gone on at length about the Eldar Codex, is that it never really changes. It kind of adjusts, but that about is as much as you get. There's a lot of old units that people don't want to get rid of. There's a lot of old emotions that people don't want to get rid of. And you end up with an army that's half competitive and half kind of ridiculous.
Well, I think the biggest problem with that has to do with when you look at when the Eldar Codexes were done. Okay, yeah. So I mean, you look at the second edition Eldar Codex shit. And okay, whatever. I never played second edition. I won't talk about it. When third edition came out, the whole design philosophy for third edition was take the second edition codexes, make it work with this current edition. So you saw that with Space Marines, you saw that with Imperial Guard, you saw that with Eldar, mm-hmm. right? All of those old armies were basically just brought into third edition compatibility.
Right.
And that was all they did. They didn't bother doing any major changes. Eldar got their 4th edition codex very late in the cycle. There were a lot of 4th edition codexes that came out before Eldar, then Eldar came out. And then, again, it comes down to timing, because immediately after the Eldar codex came out, out comes, I think it was Orcs. Again, I'm very drunk at this point, so if I'm wrong, fuck you. I don't care about your
fact checking. For all those stat-checking motherfuckers, just enjoy the show. And yes. I didn't mean to call you a bad name, but... Sorry.
We totally did mean to call you a bad name.
Sorry.
But no, so I mean, like, pretty much, like, one or two codexes after the 4th edition, which is the current Eldar Codex, came out, Games Workshop went into a design philosophy change where they said, you know what, let's stop rehashing the same old shit, and let's actually evolve our game and let's make changes to it. So mm-hmm. if you do play Eldar, yeah,
I didn't look at it that way, but I think you make a good point.
Yeah, you know, so like I said, if you do play Eldar, I'm sorry, you have been playing the same codex for 10 plus years, but suck it up, princess, because honestly, look at every 5th edition codex that's come out, and honestly, the changes are fantastic. They've done complete overhauls to things with those codexes. So, I mean, wait, and you will be rewarded for your patience in the same way that Dark Eldar players had to wait 12 years for a single codex update. So, fuck you, Eldar players.
That's bitterness. But that's what makes a good Dark Eldar player is true, true bitterness. You know what? I mean, I love the Eldar. I think the models are a lot of fun. I think that there's great stuff. There's old stuff, and there's outdated stuff. And I could go on at length about the models being a gold mine for competitive painters and a gold mine for really, really interested players who are all about the fluff. Because I think that the majority of what draws people into the Eldar is the fact that they are space elves. Ta-da! Mm-hmm. They're space elves, and space elves is kind of a novel idea. You know what? Hey, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about here, but before Warhammer 40,000, there were no space elves. It was Tolkien, and that was all you had when it came to elves. Space elves is a new genre, and there's a lot of people who have Blizzard, who have copied what Games Workshop has done and kind of done this whole like space elves ish type thing in one incarnation or another. But that was the progenitor. That was what really built up this idea of, you know, elves are immortal. What happens when their magic becomes technology or a form of technology? Mm-hmm. And that's what draws people into Eldar. It's not the rules. It's not even necessarily the models. It's
the fiction. I agree. Because I think when you look at the rules of the Eldar army, you know, you
unless, see unless very... you started back when the Eldar had mohawks.
In which case, you are dedicated, sir, because, oof.
Kyle. But anyways.
As I was going to say, you're absolutely right. When you look at the rules of the Eldar Codex, you have a codex where a third to a half of the entire book is wrong. And what I mean by that is either the points are too good where you're a moron to not take it. Like, it's just like, it doesn't matter whether you're building a fluff list or a theme list or a tournament competitive list. These are no-brainer kinds of choices.
Right.
Or they're wrong in the exact opposite way where you're just like, but I'm paying double the points. And you'd be an idiot to take it because it'll never be effective for what you're paying.
Swooping Hawks are a prime example.
Yeah, Swooping Hawks, you know, honestly, I've seen Swooping Hawks every now and then. Shining Spears.
Shining Spears, Jesus.
I love Shining Spears.
I love the idea of Shining Spears. I think Shining Spears are a brilliant fluff idea. The story behind them, the way that they fight, the whole idea of kind of this jousting jet bike of the future is awesome. But good God, you pay through the nose through them.
Yeah, what are you paying? Like almost over 200 points for five guys that are toughest with a 3+ save? Like
a good round of shooting and that entire unit is toast.
Yeah, basically, Shining Spears will be effective if your opponent is too stupid to send one tactical squad worth of shooting into them.
Yeah, well, not even the fact that their actual charge bonus for their Shining Spears finger quotes... you know, like, even that is ineffective. A unit of Rough Riders does more damage on the charge than a unit of Shining Spears.
You're absolutely right, and you can get 10 Rough Riders with Hunting Lances for way less points than you can get 5 Shining Spears.
We're talking about Taliban on horses, people.
Let's strap a bomb to a stick and let's run into shit. Go!
Shaped charges. No. I mean, I love the Eldar, if only for their fluff. And I think that that's really the selling point, and that's the joy and the beauty of that army.
For me, I think the fluff, for sure, the fluff is fantastic, but I also really have an appreciation for the models. I mean, after the Dark Eldar release, anything that Jess Goodwin touches, you just love more and more.
Good God, that man is a... I think
whatever Games Workshop is paying him is not enough to double his wage right now.
I think they're literally sucking his life force. I think he puts a certain amount of his life force into the models that he pays because the man looks haggard. But no. I agree. I think that from the beginning of the Eldar have always been the model that can be awesome or terrible. There's so much potential that if you just don't give them enough love that they can look like shit. And, I mean, like we went on to say that painted armies always are great. A finished painted army looks fantastic. But I think Eldar, they can excel. I mean, if you have a cleanly painted Eldar army, I think Danny, a friend of ours who does Eldar, the dude paints clean and his armies always look fantastic. You know?
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. You don't need to be an advanced painter. You don't need to know how to highlight.
You just have to know how to paint gems and dot white on the bottom half.
Yes. Oh,
you gotta love painting gems.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you don't like painting gems, don't stay the fuck away from Eldar.
Walk away, my friend. Walk away.
Because, I mean, back before Dark Eldar got redone, I actually converted a Dark Eldar army out of Eldar models. So, I mean, I have painted a good deal of gemstones.
Yes.
And I think just on Guardians alone, the average Guardian has like 5 to 10, depending on which sculpts you pick. So, I mean, if you don't want to paint bling, stop thinking about Eldar.
Yeah, you know what? I think competitively, Eldar can do very well. Especially in this current edition of 40K, where points denial and playing for a draw is so important.
You know what? Even then, I think because objectives are so important, you have to look at the Eldar and their troops availability. And I think they have more troops options than any other list out there. They can take jet bikes as troops. They can take Dire Avengers, which, okay, toughness 3 with a 4+ save isn't super survivable, but it's great for Eldar.
Worst save in the game is a 4+ save.
Yeah, amen. Because the 4+ you think you'll make, you know, half the time, but you never will. Your dice will fuck you on it.
No.
But I mean, they've got jet bikes, they have Dire Avengers. You can take Wraithguard, which are toughness 6 guys as fucking troops. You can take units of 20 man Guardians. Like, it's just like they have such a versatility in the troop squad that if you're playing rulebook scenarios, 66% of the time it comes down to troops and objectives. So
if there's any army in the game of Warhammer 40,000 that has that fluff based army list, and I say that in the sense of they're an army that the fluff was the driving point, and every unit that came out for that army was driven by fluff. I mean, that's what makes them so entertaining, and that's what makes them so... we talk about metagame. You can go up against an Eldar army and play completely different armies where you can't really guess. Are they going to be shooty heavy? Are they going to be combat heavy? Are they going to be psychic power heavy? Are they going to abuse wound allocation like the Seer Council or Knob Squads or anything along those lines? Are they going to be really heavy on vehicles and wave serpents and, you know, fire prisms and all of these different things? I think that that really is what makes the army entertaining to play, is there are so many variations that it's a lot of fun to play against an Eldar army. It's a lot of fun because you never really know. It's like a box of chocolates. I would never make a joke like that if I weren't this drunk, but...
I was literally about to make that comment where I was just being like, look, the Force Gump jokes are out. That means we are very drunk.
That is, I'm shamed. Shame.
Yes.
Indeed. Shame you on should me. Be.
But I mean, like, that's the thing, is just like, I think that Eldar have some of the best looking models in Warhammer 40,000. And that's not even saying, you know, according to their age. Because I mean,
they would just give us new warp spiders. I would love it.
Indeed. Because, I mean, when Dark Eldar came out and they had Harlequins, I was just like, holy shit, here's finally the excuse I get to paint some space clowns.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up a box, I built them, and I was blown away by how good those models are considering they're fucking 4 years old. Yes. And, I mean, I still think they are one of the best sculpts that Games Workshop has for Warhammer 40,000. Yep. And they're 4 fucking years old.
Well,
and then you start looking
There's a certain amount of vibrancy that you can bring out with Eldar and Harlequins and that whole range, because they are very comical. And I don't mean comical in the sense of humorous. I mean it in the sense of over the top.
Comic book?
Well, comic book, yes. Over the top. Very, you know, dramatic and unrealistic and kind of flamboyant.
Yeah.
And well, that makes for some very entertaining armies. It makes for a lot of fun to paint.
You're absolutely right. And on that fun to paint thing, like as we talked about with Chaos Demons, this is an army where the fluff supports you using different paint schemes for different units. Because in theory, if you're going to be sticking strictly to the fluff, each aspect warrior, of which there are, what, 6 or 7?
Yep.
I mean, I'm too drunk to know the number off the top of my head, so fuck you. Each aspect warrior unit, you know, has their own distinct paint scheme that should be true to that aspect warrior,
right,
and not necessarily true to the rest of the army as a whole. So, I mean, you have that freedom to paint what you want, how you want it. And again,
a la same Bretonnia.
Yeah, exactly. A la Bretonnia. It really helps break up the monotony, because, I mean, we get when you have to paint, like, 200 guardsmen the same fucking green and khaki colors.
Ugh. I will never do Cadian. I'm sorry. I will never do Cadian.
You know, I've thought about it. I'm just like, you know what? There's like, 100 different guard armies I could do that'd be fun, that'd be different than that douchebaggy leaf blower list. And, you know, at the end of the day, I can't get behind Cadians, and I think Catachan models are so bad they're comical. it's just like, this is probably the least, like, this is probably the most poor range that Games Workshop has, and they insist on supporting it. Because when the guard got re-released, what do they do? They made a Catachan command squad box.
I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Do not get me started on Catachan, because that... I will rage on Catachan. You know what? Just like I will rage on Marvel Comics and the way that they don't give Alpha Flight the love that they should give them. Because that, it's the whole idea of just like, why do we have 5 different ongoing series of Spider-Man and there's no Alpha Flight series?
For me, that's what I was going to say, is because they're literally so busy with all of the different Spider-Man universes.
Like, we need 4 Deadpools and 3 Wolverines and 6 Avengers and go fuck yourself. Okay, let me get back to Eldar here. Nathan, If you were to do up an Eldar army, what would your dream Eldar army be?
You know, it's funny that you should mention that, because when the Dark Eldar came out, I loved all the models so much, and I loved the list, and I loved the playstyle, that I actually thought about building an Eldar army immediately after. So my dream Eldar army would be a fucking foot-slogging mixed bag. Like, I'm talking outflanking, striking scorpions with Karandris, because Phoenix Lords are the shit.
What?
And, you know, like, heavy weapon supports teams, because anyone that doesn't take them is stupid. I mean, look, I get it back when they were metal and $40 a weapon and you needed, like, three of them to run a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Get it. They're plastic now. What the fuck is your excuse?
That's true.
You know, heavy weapon squads. I was going to run a mixed bag of troops where I'd have 2 units of 20 Storm Guardians with 2 units of 10 Dire Avengers and then 12 Jet Bikes and 10 Wraith Guard. Like, it's just like, I truly think that the Eldar army can excel if you run a mixed bag, because the Eldar army, unlike Marines or Guard or Tau or any of those other armies, each unit in the Eldar Codex is so specifically designed to do...
Yes.
Something that you have to run a mixed bag, because if you say I'm not going to run any Harlequins, Howling Banshees, or Striking Scorpions, you literally have no awesome close combat units. Right.
Well, you know, Eldar is all about playing smart as opposed to playing hard.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right, and because of that codex, you know, it does show its age. It's You know, it's not as points balanced as you know, Guard, Blood Angels, Tyranid, like any of the new 5th edition books. It means that you actually have way less room for mistakes.
That's the truth. I love Warp Spiders. I think Warp Spiders are one of the coolest units in that army. Never gotten a new model. Never gotten proper rules. Yeah, what are they,
a 2nd edition model right now? Like, they're fucking ancient.
Well, I mean, like, the models are just stupid looking. I mean, you get 2 poses and an Exarch if you're lucky, and you're expected to try to make this awesomely cool unit. I mean, it's like
that Mandrakes. That teleports through warp space.
Yes. Mandrakes are awesome from the case of the fluff, as anybody who has read Sabbat Martyr knows.
Yes.
Ugh.
I was so disappointed. Okay,
hold on, Nathan. Sure. Virtual high five.
Woo!
Slap. Okay. I'm sorry. I mean, like, it's an awesome unit that just never gets the love that it deserves with regards to the rules. And for Warp Spiders, I mean, I've always loved them. They're always the model that stands out in my mind when I think of the Eldar, but they never work. They never work, you know, and, us off for Eldar, I would say the big thing about Eldar is, like you said, they're so specific that playing the mixed bag, painting different color schemes, painting to your best, and absolutely putting that respect and that love and that enjoyment into the army, I don't care if you lose every game, you'll have fun. You'll enjoy yourself, and I think that the Eldar kind of excel in that range more than anyone else in the Warhammer 40,000 range.
No, I agree. I can't say anything differently. But I do want to close out Eldar with one thought, though. Look at what Dark Eldar got. Look at the treatment they got, and eagerly anticipate the future, because, I mean, they nailed Dark Eldar so bad, and if Games Workshop allows anyone other than Jess Goodwin and Phil Kelly to touch the Eldar Codex, we need to mail Anthrax to the head office. You heard it here first.
I'm gonna edit that out just for national security's sake. But, okay, moving on. So, kind of this overly drunk episode. I mean, trying to stick to topic is almost ridiculous. So, I'm going to go and I'm going to put it to you again, Nathan, here. Dream armies. Dream armies. What's your dream army? I mean, you play Tyranids, you play Warhammer, you've been talking a ton about your High Elves and what you want to do with them, but, like, what's your dream army? What's the dream army of, like, if in your wildest fantasy of, I took the time, I painted it, it was done, I'm ready, it's competitive, it's beautiful, it's fluff-based, it's... What is Britonia. Your dream army?
Hands down, Britonia.
That's not a surprise. That's not a surprise. You've talked about Britonia enough.
You know, it's true, but I mean, here is something that that people may or may not know. I did not play Warhammer Fantasy when I started working at Games Workshop.
Yep.
And as a Games Workshop employee...
If you remember, it was me who was really kicking your ass to get it going.
No, you're absolutely right. And
because I'm awesome.
Remember, we do this show for ego, nothing else.
Ego.
But I mean, when it came down to push came to shove, I needed to. The expectation is you play all of the games, and it makes sense because how can you talk to people about these games if you don't play
them? Right. As an employee of Games Workshop, you are expected to play all of the games in one incarnation or another. You yep. gotta know so, what I mean, you're talking about. You gotta know what you're selling. You gotta enjoy it. And really a big part of it is, you know, a requirement for working for Games Workshop is you have to have a fully painted army for each of the three main ranges, which is Warhammer 40,000, and Lord of the Rings. You have to have it within, what was it, 3 months of working for the company?
Well, yeah, it is 3 months, but they gave you 3 months for per game system. So, I mean, if you only played Warhammer 40,000 as I did when I first joined the company, I basically had 6 months to get both a Lord of the Rings and a Warhammer 40,000 army painted.
Right.
And, man, does dry brush and get Lord of the Rings painted fast. And that is
Urkai for the win.
Yes, that is the one and only Lord of the Rings reference we're going to make for the duration of Jaded Gamer Cast because
stupid game system, if you ask me. But
yes,
apparently Lord of the Rings is a lot better, but it was ruined for me because of that particular game system.
Indeed, but I mean, when push came to shove, when I was thinking about it, I needed a fantasy army. And it did come down between Wood Elves and Britonia, and really the only reason I picked Wood Elves was the models were brand new, and my manager was giving me a wicked deal on picking them up.
Right.
Because they were brand new, and so it was the whole idea of...
There's a certain amount of ease of paint that goes with, you know, like, that was an army you could paint up a lot faster than Britonia.
Yes, because with Britonia you got the one night, you know, color scheme, this and that. But, honestly, I've always loved Britonia. I think they are the best-looking army you can possibly make when they are painted up beautifully. I mean, obviously, you can paint Britonians like shit. You can paint anything like shit. But if you take the time and you do the best job you possibly can, there's no way a Britonian army looks bad.
No, that's the truth. I mean, I've seen all black and white Britonia armies where... They basically paint them as Templars, where it's just black and white with various colors of silver and maybe a little bit of yellow or red here and there, but they're just black and white. I want to paint this army fast, and I think there's no fully painted army that describes that particular army in such a negative light as the black and white Britonian army. Because it's so an anthem to their fluff that it's just like, you know, it's like going off and painting a Dark Eldar army white. You know, it's like, my wife and I just got a cat recently, and it's a black cat. Her name is Domino, because I wanted to name her something nerdy. And I told my wife at one point that her name was going to be Saruman the White. Because I was just like, the perfect name for a black cat that I don't necessarily want is Saruman the White. Because it's just like, I'm not actually naming the cat so much as naming the fact that I don't necessarily want a cat. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Domino, she's a great cat. You know, but it's just like, when I see the black and white Bretonian army, it's like you're painting something that is just so opposite of what the army represents that it's painful to look at it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think the other thing is because, I mean, Bretonnia always gets the talk about, the knights, the knights, the knights. But, I mean, I think that the peasants make that army shine. Men-at-arms, Braille Reliquary, peasant bowmen, and I mean...
Dude, that Man-at-Arms box set, to this day, is so well done. It's so easy to put together. It's so easy to paint. It looks so good as a full unit. Mm-hmm. God, you can't go wrong with Man-at-Arms. And fuck, yeah. Halberds, man. Halberds are just... They are king in 8th edition.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that casualties get removed from the back and you get to support the second rank, it means you're always getting a ton of strength for attacks on a Man-at-Arms. And no, like I said, it's just... I truly think that for me... Eventually, when I get around to it, Bretonnia will become sort of my Tyranids of fantasy, and I'm just going to love to add into them and do that because, I mean, fuck, I love the look of that army, and I love the play style of, especially in 8th edition. You know, like I said, we talked about it with our higher learning however many episodes ago because, hey, this is our reserve episode, so who the fuck knows how many episodes it was. But we talked about it. We said, you know what, Bretonnia, you do need a shift in the way you approach them. You can't just charge two units of knights to the front and just be like, I'll win combat.
Play smart instead of playing hard.
Yeah,
that's the motto for 8th edition, if you ask me. There's a lot of armies, you gotta play smart.
Cavalry need to be played and selected much more smartly because, I mean, honestly...
Much more
smartly. Hey, listen, I'm fucking drunk. Fuck you. I am drunk and it is past midnight. So, fuck you. But I mean, like, that's like a 5 or 6 man unit of cavalry is fucking worthless. You need to be willing to make the room in your list to take the unit with a rank.
Grow a pair and do it.
Yeah, dude, it's like, what, 100 extra points? Trim. Drop a war machine. You'll thank me later.
Well, you know. I agree. I think that Bretonnia, for a lot of people, is that dream army. Because they take that higher standard of painting commitment.
Yeah.
And they definitely do take that higher standard of dedication when it comes to, are you going to play them smart? Are you really going to know your army? Are you going to be dedicated to being effective? And, you know what? I think that is really what is the draw for a lot of people to that army. I was talking to a friend of mine, and after the painting episode that we had done, she said to me that, you know, why would you not want to paint these models, you know, and to her and she is a brilliant artist, brilliant. And I mean, the stuff she draws, like she'll draw something in 45 minutes that makes me just hate her guts. You know, I mean, like, you know, she looks at these models and she doesn't play the game. She listens to the podcast and, you know, she says, but why wouldn't you? You know, it's almost like that kind of like innocent view of like, but that's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And looking at Bretonnia, that was her army. That was the army that she said, God, that is my army. That is beautiful. The Green Knight, the Pegasus Knights, all of these different things are just so beautiful looking. Why wouldn't you love them and paint them and just do them to the top notch nth degree of dedication? So yes, I think that there's a majority of gamers who do look at Bretonnia and say to themselves, like, this is my dream army. I'll never do it, but it is the dream army.
See, what I've decided to do is I've decided that I will do it, but it's going to be like fucking 5 years that it'll be done. Because what I've decided is that basically after every little fucking, I don't know, tangent I go on, so I'm like, I'm going to paint a high elf now. As soon as I'm done that, I'm going to paint one knight.
Ah, that's a plan.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, it's just like if I go fucking binge painting and I paint 30 Hormagaunts and then I'm going to paint one knight of Bretonnia, that night is going to be absolutely beautiful because I'm painting one model and I'm going to take the time and I'm going to go ahead and do the kind of painting techniques that one would not normally do when batch painting an army, because you can say, hey, this is a single character.
Well,
and I'm going to finish it and I'm going to move on.
Yeah, and part of the fluff for Bretonnia is there really are only primary colors to pick from, because green is essentially like green, brown, orange. Things of those nature are considered in the Bretonnian fluff to be peasant colors. So you really only have to choose from is white, black, red, blue, and yellow. And yep. Like purple, pink, maybe, but for the most part, like you have four or five colors to choose from. And I think that that kind of separation of time, where it's just like 3 or 4 months between painting nights, boy, that would benefit you a ton.
Well, yeah, because I mean, then you're not forcing it. Because no, if you were going to sit down and say, "I'm going to paint 12," and
trust me, we have forced a Bretonnian army. I mean, that whole gay horse joke comes from the idea of me painting a bubblegum pink and sky pastel blue Bretonnian knight to go with my questing knights, because I was just so fucking annoyed with painting horses and this same color scheme over and over again. With
there's only so many ways you can combine. Yeah, I was going to say, there's only so many ways you can combine black and yellow. Look, it's a check pattern. Look, now it's like half and half. Now it's
quarter. Ooh, diamonds. Ooh, triangles. I am tired of geometric bullshit. Moving on.
What about you, Lang? What is your dream army? If you were going to do one army, 40K or fantasy, I know you're going to pick a fantasy army, but if you were going to do one army, what is it?
You're wrong. Honestly, it's the army that I have purchased and that I have tried on multiple occasions to really, really work on. And that is my Talarin Imperial Guard Army, Warhammer 40,000.
Funny that you're a fantasy player that picks a 40K army, and I'm a 40K player that picks a fantasy army.
Oh my god, dude, do you want to make out after this show? Because you and I mean, that would be... I'm sorry, hold on. Awesome sex. Awesome sex. Moving on. But I love you, Irina. That's my wife. No. I mean, that's really it. My dream army... As soon as I started Warhammer 40,000 and really started looking at other armies, was the Talarin Imperial Guard army. I have almost every model and every Forge World iteration. Excluding the Talarin penis riders, Talarin cock riders. There's literally like I've purchased all of the bits. I've purchased all of the models. I have a figure case dedicated to them. I have a carrying case dedicated to them. I have models and test models and special characters and everything purchased for over 5 years now. And that is the army that I sometimes worry that I will never finish, because I want them to be my dream army. I want them to be my show army. I want them to be my hours and hours and hours of dedication army that I just don't think that they will ever be. I mean, you know what? Like I've got, you know, Leman Russ Exterminators. I've got Leman Russ Executioners. I've got Captain Al Raheed. I've got every single sergeant, I've got every variation of every model, I've got a ton of mortars, I've got last cannon teams, I've got lists built for the last Imperial Guard Codex, I've got lists built for the current Imperial Guard Codex, I've got, you know, fluff written up, there's something about that army that just grabs my imagination, and I don't think that I will ever have the time or the dedication until I'm retired to really make that army happen, because I want them to be my dream army, and anything less than that is a kick in the fucking pills, and I just don't think I could ever stomach it.
You know what I said? I get it. I would never rush my Bretonnia, because
I think that's a disservice to the models and a disservice to what I hope to field with the models. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, we are both of the same opinion in regards to painting, as in do it.
Right.
If not, you're a cockbag. Sorry, we're drunk. We're going to say things like this.
Well, you know, like, our favorite color is done. Get them done, and you'll have nothing but respect from your opponent.
Well,
but...
yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing. My Tyranids are cleanly painted and done with very basic color schemes. I mean, I do my flesh by dry brushing, and I do my carapace by layering. There is nothing spectacular about the army, but I love the way they look. I would never trade.
I had a fun time playing your Tyranids.
Yeah, you know, like, that's the thing is, like, I will never trade the way they look deployed, even though it's all fucking basic. Because remember, I told you in previous episodes, I have painted 100 Termagants in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, they're not great. No. They're not going to win me Golden Demons.
Right.
But the fact that they are done.
But you love them.
And I love them. I love them to death.
Right.
The fact that I'm a much better painter now than I was 4 years ago when I started the army, but I do not change that color scheme because I fucking love the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, finish your army. Sorry, I mean, remember, this is the drunk episode. We're ranting.
Tangents.
Yeah,
but tangents. No, I mean, getting back to my Talaran Imperial Guard army.
Thank God you can remember what we were talking about.
I've had that Captain Al Rahim model for years, 6-7 years, and I've said on multiple occasions that I will paint him up for painting contests because it's such a awesomely painted model. And you know what? It's not even primed. It's not even primed because I can't bring myself to so much as start working on it without knowing that I'm going to put every last bit of my heart and soul into this particular model. Mm-hmm. At the last Games Workshop Bits Bazaar, I actually tried to sell my Talaran army, and nobody wanted it, nobody bought it, nobody even so much as made an offer on it. And after the fact, I was so grateful that nobody wanted to buy it, because after the fact, I thought to myself, like, man, no, I love this army. I don't want to get rid of this army. This is the army I'm going to do. This is my dream army. I don't want to, like, you know, it was almost just like a realization of, this is the perfect army for me. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to make look glorious. And I mean, like, I'm the type of person who, when I pick up a video game, the character that I want to play in that video game, whether it's a fighting game or an MMO or whatever it is the most underplayed character. I'm drawn to the underdog. I'm drawn to the character that nobody plays because that's what intrigues me. You know, like, I have purchased a multitude of Marine models, but the color scheme that I'm using is unorthodox. It's browns. Like, if you guys looked at the pictures of the Marines that I posted from episode 5, you know, like, the color scheme is very unorthodox. It's brown and blue. I love it.
Well, you know, and I think on that line, I said a number of episodes back that I kind of like doing things
we should maybe stop quoting ourselves because that just builds ego.
Look, why would I stop quoting someone as awesome as myself?
good sir, when in Rome.
Proceed. That's right. But I mean, at the end of the day, as I've said before, I enjoy doing armies that are off the beaten path. Like, for me, it's not about being the underdog. It's about being the only guy that shows up to a tournament of 100 people that is playing this army or this army that looks this particular way, you know?
That theme,
even though before the new Dark Eldar Codex came out, I had a completely converted Dark Eldar army. It was all made out of Eldar models, and it looked phenomenal, and it lost almost every other game. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck, it was a terrible list. Like, it didn't, the old 12-year-old Dark Eldar, Codex, could not function well in 5th edition.
Right.
But I would take it to tournaments with a smile on my face, knowing that nobody in the room had an army that looked as good as mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like taking armies like that because I love, like I said, being on off the beaten path. And so, I mean, for me, it's like I've tried to do Marine armies. Like, I love Ultramarines. I love their fluff. I love the look of them. I love painting the color blue. It's a fun color to paint.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about Ultramarines before they were fucking eagle fetishists?
Yeah. Yeah, but all Space Marines are fetishists.
No. Fuck you. Imperial Fists for the win. The Imperial Fists are the greatest Space Marine chapter ever created.
You know, I want to take a moment here.
Listen, if you disagree with me, go fuck yourself.
I don't disagree with you. I'm actually going to plug something done by, I can't even remember what web forum, I think it was Bolter and Chainsword, where they talked about what would have happened if Horus turned his back on it, and it resulted in the Dornian heresy, where they said that Rogel Dorn got... Have you heard of it?
I've caught bits and pieces of people talking about it, but...
Oh my God, I started reading the shit like 3 weeks ago, and I'm so sold on doing like a Chaos Marine army painted in like the Rogel Dorn like Chaos Imperial Fist color schemes because
I had a bit of fiction in my head for the last few years about the idea of the Imperial Fist going to Chaos and becoming Nurgle and becoming all these different types of things where these bits of their pure yellow were shining through the pustules and the dark, dirty green and browns and stuff of that nature. But, I mean, hey, that leads right back into the idea of fluff making the game, you know? I mean, we wouldn't have these ideas without fluff. Even my Space Marine chapter, which showed up in, like, Canadian White Dwarf supplements and things of that nature... You know, like, they're browns and blues and that kind of unorthodox color. But, like, even if you ask me from my nerdiest of nerdiest standpoints, what is the progenitor of that Space Marine company is they are an offshoot of the Imperial Fists. Because I love it. I love the fluff. I love Rogel Dorn. You know, Sanguinius was a fucking pussy who fell on his sword and bewildering the dumb motherfucker to the point where the Emperor could kill him. And then Rogel Dorn shows up and he picks up the Emperor and saves him after taking out the engines to making sure that the Horus Heresy failed. Rogel Dorn for the win. Fist bump. I'm going to punch the microphone right now. Fist bump.
Listen, I agree. I mean, I've tried to do both Loyalist and Chaos Space Marine armies. Right. I mean, I've tried. And I mean, because they are so popular, I always, like, get, like, three or four. Like, I think I have, like, five painted Ultramarines, and that's it.
Right.
And I made it as far as one squad of 12 Emperor's Children. Because for me, I think the only thing cooler than Imperial Fists in my mind, and I mean, you can disagree, I don't give a fuck about you, is
dude, you know,
is the Emperor's Children.
We have to have like a working relationship to make this podcast work.
You know, when we are half drunk and sober, it's a working relationship. When we are both really drunk, you can go fuck yourself. I don't care.
I'm gonna cry and bite this pillow.
No, but I mean, I love Emperor's Children because I love the idea of these guys were so, like, it's almost like the daddy issues chapter. They really did nothing but try to strive for perfection and try to get the approval of their father, which never happened. And so at the end of the day, they just got snubbed and they were like, well, fuck you then. And they went to Chaos.
Well, they went to rock and roll because there's no way to upset your parents like enjoying rock and roll. No, I mean, Emperor's Children, I think, is funny because they were the Mohawk rock and roll chapter that was kind of goofy. And it was the joke chapter where they were just like, ha ha ha, noise Marines. They play rock and roll really loud. Get it? And, you know, they've kind of turned into this, you know, this newish type chapter of Noise Marines that is very interesting with Slaanesh and with, you know, the idea that they use this kind of sonic ability to, you know, hit people through the psychic realm as well as the physical realm. But that comes from development and dedication and, you know, kind of fan love that comes from it. You know, where people kind of look at this rock and roll Sound Marine army and they say, you know what, that is my dream army because it's fun. And then they turn that fun into interest and they turn that fun into, you know, kind of this peculiar separation from normal Marines or normal Chaos Marines. And that's, you know, like, that's what makes the game fun. Like, that's gold to some people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, you know, if we're going to go back to what's your dream army, for me, my dream army of 40K, which is, you know, beneath Britonia, is the idea of doing actually a mid-heresy Emperor's Children army, where I thought about doing, like, you know, running the Chaos Marine Codex and taking units that just had an icon of Slaanesh and were painted in the pre-heresy purple and gold colors.
Right.
As well as having, you know, Noise Marine units, which were in the pure black and pink, and then running a Terminator squad that would sort of bridge the gap with some black and pink, some purple and gold, and as well as...
Ooh, that'd be really nice.
Yeah, you know, as well as models that were kind of halfway between, so some of the purple that's turning into pink, you know, and so, I mean, for me, I was just like, you know what, I think that would be a really, really fun army list to paint. Who the fuck knows if it would win games, but at that point, I don't give a shit.
What are you, like, are you using Marine Codex rules or Chaos Marine?
I think Chaos Marine, because I just think that nothing captures that mid-heresy like the Noise Marine rules. Like, the Sonic Blaster is probably the most unique weapon in all of Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah. For sure, because that's their introduction to it. That's when they first picked it up. You know,
absolutely.
That curiosity that comes from, like, hey, we've given ourselves over to the dark gods. You know, what do we get from it? Hey, look at all these cool new weapons that come our way. You know, via the demons and the and that kind of that fluff that goes along with it. To kind of parallel what you're saying, I think for fantasy, my dream army, oddly enough, is my High Elves. I own the models. Again, I own the models. I have the plan. I own special character models. I've got full units of Elarial and her Maiden Guard. I've got, you know, all the models purchased for my Phoenix Guard and the heroes. And, like, you guys saw the paint scheme that I had for my Phoenix Guard Lord and all that kind of stuff. I mean, like, that's the army that, to me, is the dream army. If I could really put the time and the effort and really do it to the best of my abilities, I think that would be my dream army for fantasy, because I think High Elves, very similar to the Eldar, which is their brothers on the 40K side, is that, you know, every unit in the army kind of has this, with the exception of Sea Guard, has this very specific role. And that's what makes them fun to play, where you do paint that mishmash of this unit and that unit because they're fun to paint, they're cool models, they've got different color schemes. And if you're playing smart rather than playing hard, you can still win a lot of games and enjoy it. You know, like Mike said in his email back in the mailbag episode, you know, playing those fluff armies, he still wins 3 out of 4 games. It's not because he's playing losers and kids and people who don't know what they're doing. It's just that the guy knows his army, he knows the fluff, and he's playing smart rather than playing hard, unless he's losing to me.
any shot we can take is a good shot.
You know, which is funny, because Mike is the only guy that I would refer to as Master Chief, because the that dude could turn me inside out. I am not intimidated by very many people in my life, but that guy could turn me inside out, and there's no way around that. But you know, it's that kind of, you know, shoot for the stars, you know, go for your dream army. And, you know, if I had to give any advice to anybody in my drunken state, it's that it's, you know, go for your dream army. You know, don't compromise. Yep. Don't compromise, because, you know, I can say that I compromised on both of my first armies, my Dark Eldar army and my Orc army. I compromised to get them done, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, if I have to give you advice, it's don't compromise.
No, and I mean, like I said, I do understand the idea of compromising for your first army, because you know what? The excitement of playing the game is huge.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, like, it's just like all you want to do is get in and get playing. And so, I mean, I get the idea of dun is your favorite color. And that's kind of why, like, for me, I have a painted probably 3,000 points of Wood Elves and 4,000 or 5,000 points of Tyranids. And that's why, for me, whenever it gets down to doing a second army for either Warhammer 40,000 or Fantasy, it's just like, it takes me for fucking ever, because that army is the army that I refuse to compromise on. Like, I'm right. Just like, oh, you know what? I can play. Yeah, it's just like, I can play games with my Tyranids. I can play games with my Wood Elves. So why should I rush this army? Why should I not do the absolute best job that I possibly can?
Or at least
to show them off.
Right, or at least to the standard that you feel is the minimum. Not even necessarily the minimum, but like the minimum for your own personal goals. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
My lizardmen kind of fall into that slot where it's like, you know, my goal for my lizardmen is to do the majority of the army with nothing but washes. And that's kind of my goal, is just like, how good can I make this army if I'm doing nothing but washes? How how can I mix them? How can I, you know, make this army individual without making it look like shit, but kind of stick to that challenge of, it's nothing but washes.
Well, and I mean, like I said, I've played against your lizardmen. I've seen them. They look fucking amazing. Like,
yeah, they turned out well.
You know what? First of all, I need everyone to know this. So if you know me personally, you already know this fact, but I hate lizardmen. Okay? In the same way that, you know how every single person has that one irrational hatred where it's just like, no, I hate the New England Patriots. Why? Because they're fucking stupid. That's why. I hate
Tau.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, everyone has that one irrational hatred. I fucking hate lizardmen. There's no real reason why I do. There's nothing about the concept of the army or the look of the army that's necessarily bad. But I just look at them and I think they're fucking retarded. again, my thing. But I can look at your lizardmen, Lang, and I can say, you know what? They look really good. And I know that all you're doing is washing for 90% of the model. And they still look really great, even though I think they're the stupidest army in the entire game of Warhammer.
Good for you. no, I won't get into anything, because your reply will inevitably be, what's the score? And I'll put it myself. But
you're right. It
was. Two Treeman, motherfucker. No. I mean, when it comes to dream armies, I will say, you know, the big thing is don't compromise. You know, if your dream army is the first army that you're starting and you really want to do it, you will appreciate that ability to avoid compromise at the end of the day. Whether that's a year down the road or whether it's a few months down the road, you know, don't compromise. It's been 6 or 7 years, and only now am I going back to my Orc and Goblin army that I compromised on, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I can really put some polish on this army. You know, I mean, I can take the new washes, or I can add some new models, or I can take kind of what I know now that I didn't know then, and really make this army stand out. That has excited me about that army, but I wish perpetually that I had really given it the time and the effort that it deserved back when I had done the army.
Well, you know what? I think that's rare, though. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because I do know of a guy in E-Town, you know, up where you are, like Mark Bass, and I don't even know if he listens to our podcast or if that's a useless shout-out.
I added him to the group, but I haven't heard anything from him.
Fantastic. But, I mean, this is a guy that refused to compromise. Like, I remember playing back in 4th edition of Warhammer 40,000, everyone would be playing games, and Mark Bass would be the guy that was there talking with everyone else because his army wasn't done.
Yes.
So, I mean, he would go to hang out. He would talk with everyone. He would chew the fat. He would talk strategy and tactics. His army wasn't done. And then one day he'd finished it, and he brought it in. And this is one of the most beautiful armies I have ever seen.
Super clean. Super clean.
He has won multiple Best Painted Awards with this army because it is beautiful. It is the most beautiful Ultramarines army I have ever seen in my life, including things I've seen in the
Yen I'll be fully honest. It's the army that made me not want to paint Ultramarines because I knew it was just like, that's the standard, and that's the amount of dedication that I should be putting into Ultramarines. And it was just like, you know what? I'll never do an Ultramarines army because, like, that is the epitome of, like, really putting the time and the effort and the love into an Ultramarines army. Mm-hmm. That, like, you know what? He is Ultramarines as far as I'm concerned.
No, listen, I agree wholeheartedly. But, I mean, like, he is, I believe, the exception to the rule in that. He was willing to not compromise. Right. And you see that in his army. You see the love in his army. And
the dude beautiful. Adapted to every new edition. Like, every new edition and every new codex, he adapted.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, because he spent so long painted this army. He started in 3rd edition.
Right.
The first time I saw him game was mid 4th edition. So, I mean, like, he started this army. Then the fucking game system, the game rules changed. So what did he do? He took what he had painted, he worked it in, and made a phenomenal list for 4th edition, and he just kept working at it, and he refused to compromise. And you know, I'm totally going to talk for him because I'm drunk, but I think he's very happy with.
Hey, get that dick out of your mouth, Nathan.
Sorry. You know, but like I said, it's just like he refused to compromise, and I get that that's hard to do with the first army because I compromised on my Wood Elves, I compromised on my Tyranids to get them done. And I don't regret those decisions. I love the fact that I was able to play games, but man, do I want to get those like I said, that Bretonnian army and that Ember's Children army done because that would finally be my opportunity to go to a tournament, to go to even just a games night and say, this is my army and I'm fucking proud of it. Yeah. I don't care if I lose. It just doesn't matter anymore because I am so proud of having that army done.
Well, you know, like, I've sold multiple armies, you know, like, I every army that I pick up, I dedicate myself to, you know, like, I'm not just the type of person who gets distracted by the shiny object and has that Jason reaction of, I gotta do that new army. Where the dude's got like 8 armies on the run where that are like half completed, you know, like I pick an army, I go with it, I go full on until it's finished, and then I've got a finished army. And like I've got four fantasy armies, I've got 3 40K armies, you know, I mean I've got multiple painted armies, but you know, for me, I do appreciate that idea of kind of looking back to my old Orc and Goblin army that I painted in a rush that I compromised on, and now, years and years later, I have never been able to sell it, partly because I think it's garbage, because I compromised on it, and now I'm looking at it going like, you know what, I should start touching this army up. I should go back, and I should start making it what I wanted it to be in the first place. And that has renewed my interest in that army. So, you know, I think that just builds right back into that idea of, like, you know what? Don't compromise. If you've got the dedication and you can really put the time in, don't compromise, man. Do it right. Do it well. And, you know, you will be very happy with the results. And you will appreciate the fact that you did it well. And your opponents will, too.
Yeah, you know what? And actually, it's funny that you say that because, you know, I've talked at length about my Tyranid army, and my current color scheme is not my original one. I mean, you are one of, I think, 4 or 5 people in the region that have seen my original Tyranid color scheme. They were fucking awful. You know, they were literally, you know, the idea of dun is the best color. And, and nothing other than dun will be accepted because, God, they were terrible. And it was only years later because, I mean, I started playing Tyranids in 98, and it was 06 when I started my current color scheme.
So, I mean, that's 8 years of running this god-awful looking, you know what, hey, they're done, I'm not going to complain,
right.
army. When I went back and I really started painting, and it was only when I started repainting that army that I didn't compromise, because you know what, when I did them, that was the best I could do.
Right.
You know, after 4 years, I'm a better painter and I can do better, but well, I refuse to change it because it looks better. You know, it looks great. Right. I deploy that army on the field when I can deploy 150 models and I can spread them out across the board and they're all fully painted and they're all competently painted. I personally don't think there's any army that looks better. And even though I've never won a best painted, I don't give a fuck. No, like I said, I don't give a fuck because I can deploy that army and I can look at it and I can say, you know what? That's amazing.
I won't disagree with your dream.
I love it.
But yeah, you know, I think that continually feeds into this idea of, you know, there's nothing wrong with compromising. We're not telling you not to compromise, but, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and from the perspective of the jaded gamer that you will inevitably be, you know, it's... you will become Darth Vader.
Even Penny Arcade ran an article about eventually getting jaded and going online to complain about the new shit. It's inevitable.
No, it's inevitable. You will eventually become the jaded gamer, but, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. We're not shitting on people who decide that they need to compromise to get their stuff done for a tournament or get it done so that they can just get it played, or, you know, we're excluding the people who say that playing with unpainted models is better than blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, it just, you know, it, from the 2020 jaded gamer perspective, don't compromise. You will appreciate it. And your opponents will appreciate it. And you know what? You'll find that the first army you paint is your dream army, as opposed to the first army you paint being the army that you neglect and push aside for the next one or the one after that, that you actually kind of take the time to slowly work on. Like I said, it's only years later that I start looking at my Orc and Goblin army saying, you know, I should start looking at this again. I should really start touching it up. I should really make it a nice finished looking army. I'm going to do that, man. It's fired me up, but I regret going back. I regret looking back and saying, man, you know what? 65 Orc boys in the night is awesome. But I wish I had really taken the time prior to that to really do them up to a level that I was really proud of. But there's no right or wrong in this entire conversation, which I think is kind of what we're getting at with our drunken, contradictory ramblings.
If you're still listening, thank you. I can't even remember what we've talked about earlier, so I mean, I don't even know if we've made sense or if this is a natural progression or whether you're just sitting there at work going, what the fuck are these two drunkards talking about?
So surprise, Nathan, considering that this is the next episode, it's your turn for a stupidity check.
Oh, snap. I was... I think that the stupidity check for this week has to be, you know, I've ragged on Games Workshop a lot in the past, so I'm going to avoid them. I think that the stupidity check has to be netlists. You know what, like I said, we've talked about it in numerous episodes, this one included, other, you know, past ones also, but at the end of the day, you will never love an army as much, and you will never know an army as well, and you'll never be able to play it as well as if you've put in the blood, sweat, and tears of getting it painted and playing your games and changing the list and just evolving with it. And I really think that netlists are the lazy way out.
Well, you know, I almost disagree in the sense of saying that it's not necessarily lazy. I think that it's kind of an anthem to the game as a whole. I mean, if you're going online and you're building this net list, you're taking someone else's experience and expertise, if we're going to even call it expertise, and you are trying to adapt that to your own playing style. And there is nothing that is going to kill your enjoyment of the hobby faster than playing someone else's game and trying to enjoy it.
Yeah, you know what? And like I said, I think what you said of playing style is correct, because, I mean, this is a game where you can go to a tournament and sure, there are 12 Blood Angels armies there, but no two of them are identical, because everyone has that same play style, whether that is I'm going to maximize my shooting with fast vehicles or I'm going to ram my combat down your throat.
Right.
Everybody has a different way of approaching the game and a different way of playing it, and your way may not be my way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I have talked, and I don't think we this has hit a podcast, but you and I have talked about how I am an unorthodox general in that I have a plan going into a game, and the moment the game starts, I no longer have a plan. I just do shit and try to capitalize on your mistakes.
Right. Your plan extends to turn two.
And yeah, you know, and that is right. where it ends.
But I think that is exemplified in 40K more than it is in fantasy. Because I think in fantasy your plan tends to extend to turn four, you know, at the worst turn three. Whereas in fantasy you kind of have a plan, you deploy according to that plan, and then you basically after turn two you're just playing the reaction game. Where you're just waiting for your opponent to do stuff and then reacting to it. And no, the best way to be effective.
Yeah, and like I said, in 40K that makes me a very good general, because I've literally had games where I'm standing in a tournament and my opponent's muttering to himself, where he's just like, okay, so you did that, so you're hoping I'm going to do this. And in reality, I haven't thought that far in advance.
Right.
I just moved my guys in a random order where I'm just like, this seems to make sense at this point in time. And I'm hoping that you will make a mistake in trying to second guess me, because I will pounce on your mistake. But like I said, that is my approach. That is unique to me. Maybe there's other people that play the game that way, but I doubt it.
Right.
Because honestly, when you say I have no plan, I just move shit around and hope for the best, that's a terrible way to approach the game. Like, let's be honest. But I mean, that is very different from even...
Unless you're just fucking super lucky with your goddamn wood elves and... playing random is all gold for you because you're a lucky son of a bitch.
You say lucky, but, you know, 2-0, bitch. results speak louder than luck.
Rematch.
You know, but I
rematch,
mean,
you son of a bitch.
Oh, look, I'll go 3-0. That's fine. you know, like I said, it's just... The way I play the game is different from the way you play the game. So if I were to take your net list, I'm going to fucking suck with it.
Right. That's a failed stupidity check without a doubt.
Yes.
Ta-da! And then it just kind of ends. So that was our backup episode. Thank you for listening. This has been Jaded GamerCast for this week. My name is Lang. Have a good one.